Today's podcast is sponsored by RadRx, your source for quality online education for interventional and diagnostic radiology coding, taught by subject matter expert Stacy Buck. For more information and testimonials, visit RadRx.com. Struggling to learn interventional radiology coding? If so, RadRx has the perfect solution for you. Cracking the IR Code, Mastering Interventional Radiology and Cardiology online training program. In this program, interventional radiology coding expert Stacy Buck breaks down the complexities of interventional radiology coding in easy-to-understand terms so you can grasp this complex specialty. Through her course, Stacy has assisted many coders with little or no interventional radiology coding experience in successfully passing the CIRC exam on the first attempt. For additional information and testimonials, visit RadRx.com. Welcome to Who Cares What Stacy Says, a podcast providing insights and advice on how to take your medical coding career to the next level. And now, here's your host, Stacy Buck.
Welcome to Who Cares What Stacy Says. I am your host, Stacy Buck. Today's episode is the last of my three episodes with Brian Quee. I certainly have had fun chatting with Brian. In this episode, Brian shares his most important piece of advice for coding and HIM professionals and shares those individuals who are most influential in his career, and that led me to share how I overcame my fear of public speaking. You will also get to hear Brian's version of Christine Hall's most embarrassing moment, and he shares one of his own. We finally wrap up our discussion with Brian asking me the question, "What do women want?" And as with parts one and two, we had several laughs along the way. Enjoy part three. Okay, so let me ask you this question. What is the most important piece of advice you have for someone entering the HIM or coding profession?
Communicate. The ability to, I think we've talked about this, is to, you know, when you come out of school, unfortunately, I feel a good majority people coming out of school feel that they're entitled still. Like you yes. have a degree, you have a certification. Now give me a job, right? And so whenever I see this posted on social media, I stop answering because it just won't stop. But the question I always ask is why? What makes you worthy to get a coding job? Aside from the degree and the coding credential, why should I hire you, or why are you qualified for this position? And if you can't answer that, aside from, oh, I have a degree and I have a credential, then you really have to step back and think about that. It's all about proving yourself beyond the competition. But I think what would stand yourself out from the competition is showing who you are, right? Mm-hmm. Your personality, mm-hmm. how you communicate. That's why I say I always make it a point to make people laugh, because it shows my lighten up the mood, especially in stressful situations, right? So that way we could focus at the task at hand. Those are the things that I try and do that is over and beyond what is entitled, what you feel that you're entitled for. I think that's what we need to do. You need to do more, but that carries on over to, hey, you got to learn how to talk to professionals. Hey, you got to learn how to connect with people. Hey, it's all about interpersonal right. skills. And I think over the past couple of years with the podcasting, and even when I take on students and mentor them and put, you could tell like that skill is lacking. Yeah. And so it takes them, like for me, it takes me right away to get into it. I remember there was one student, it took her an hour to warm up. Mm-hmm. You could see it happening. And so finally, in that situation where you finally have that interpersonal interaction, she finally went out and applied it and got a job. So, that's the one thing that you got to do is just talk. Can you talk to me? Can we carry conversation? I think that's the most important piece that any professional should have.
Yeah. So then what would you say to that person who is that introvert who is painfully shy? That was me once upon a time. And I did not start conversations with people. I wouldn't do it at all. Mm-hmm. So how does someone overcome that if that's what they struggle with? And I think that for a lot of people coming into the profession, there's an intimidation factor. They're intimidated about approaching someone who's working in the profession. And so if you are that shy person, painfully shy, it's not the easiest thing to take that first step. So what would you tell them to help them overcome that and step out?
Practice it. It's not something that happens overnight. I never, you know, I was the shy person too in high school. Never talked. It wasn't until I got into college where they just picked me to be the president of an Asian student unit at FIU. And that required me to conduct meetings, to host mm-hmm. cultural shows. I mean, hello, I was never. But the thing is that I had the experience of not speaking, but performing. I played in band. I did piano. I did mm-hmm. sports. So I was exposed to being in front of a crowd, but not necessarily being the spotlight person in front of the crowd. So it wasn't until I got into college that I started being the centerpiece or the focus of the attention that I'm like, oh, okay, this is interesting. And so I think when you control the situation, when you're able to control the situation, it's not that bad, right? Meaning like if you're an introvert, it's because you're of the unknown or you have no control. You feel like you have no control of the conversation, you know? And sometimes you would feel like, well, if I ask a question, it's a dumb question. And for most people, like myself, you can ask those dumb questions. It's okay to ask dumb questions because I will give you the answer that you need. And it helped me identify where you're at in your career. Like, okay, based upon that question, I think she needs to start all the way down here. And we need to have this conversation at this point, you know? And so another thing is don't feel intimidated. People are willing to help, like yourself. Like when you talk about your theology modules, you know, you offer the help, but do they go out for the help? You know, do they realize that they can go? Again, it's all about intimidation. Don't feel that way. Don't feel intimidated, but it's practice, you know. When I took that student and put her on YouTube, she was just so like worried, but it took her an hour. Actually, it took her 2 hours to finally get out of asking those questions to finally really get into a conversation about HIM. So it's you need more of that. We need more of that. That's why, like, you know, the YouTube is important. The podcast is important. Mm-hmm. It's not for you to listen. This is a template for you to do it. That's why every person that I get onto the podcast, I said, look, just do the same thing because it's a skill that it carries over. It translates into many other things.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's easier said than done. One thing that I started doing a long time ago, and I started doing this when I was traveling. I used to travel a lot for work. Mm-hmm. And when you're traveling alone, it totally sucks. And it can be pretty unbearable. People think, oh, travel's glamorous. No, it's not. You're spending a lot of time in an airport and like on a plane. And so what I would do when I was traveling, because I was never one to like talk to strangers. That was never like my thing because I was that painfully shy person. Mm-hmm. But in travel, if I'm sitting next to somebody waiting for the flight, I might strike up a conversation. I might make a comment about something mm-hmm. or sitting next to somebody like on the plane. It's like mm-hmm. sometimes it just takes something very casual like that to try to stir a conversation. Yeah. And then most people will engage in conversation with you and talk to you. I mean, I had a lot of great conversations with a lot of people in my travels. And whenever I would get on a plane, I would think to myself, I hope I sit next to somebody who's super cool and friendly, who I can talk to, because it's going to make the flight more enjoyable. It's mm-hmm. going to go by faster. And I had great people that I sat next to that I could talk to for the whole flight. And then other times you'd sit next to the person who just wanted to bury their face in their book or put on headphones and not talk to anybody. And that would like, I find that so like unnerving. Like I didn't like that, but most people are happy to talk. Or even now when I'm out in public, if I'm standing in a long line somewhere, I'll just make a comment about something to the person that I'm standing in line. Now it's like second nature to me to engage in conversation with a stranger, just by commenting on something, you know, that you see or you're observing or you know, maybe sometimes you're complaining about something, and so you're commiserating with the person, you know, that you're waiting with. But that's, it's little things like that. I think that's like less intimidating. Like, again, if you're at the store and you're standing in line, try to strike up a conversation with somebody. If you're afraid of approaching that professional because, oh, they're way up here and I'm like, you know, way down here, you know, what are they going to think? Most people in the profession are going to be very kind to you and friendly. Yeah,
that's right.
And embrace you. Now, you may come across some people who are abrupt and rude and don't have time for you. That occurs in every aspect of life.
Yeah, that's okay.
That, you know, you, but the vast majority of people, I know when I was coming up in the profession, the way that I met people was, so I went to school at FIU, just like you did. And when I was a student there, I was a member of the South Florida Regional Association for the state of Florida. And I would go to like all of those meetings. And then I would go to like the social events that they would have and the parties and things. And I met people that way. And then when you meet people who are, that are in the profession, then they introduce you to other people in the profession. Like, and then the people that I interacted with, they never made me feel like less than when I was a student and when I was working in an entry level, like HIM position. They always were very nice to me, kind to me, you know, encouraged me, did like whatever they could. And so Mario Perez is one of the first people that I remember meeting. Like everybody like knows Mario. I need to have him on the podcast at some point in time if he's willing. And he was one of the first HIM professionals that I met. And one thing I love about Mario that was true back then and is still true today, he is very welcoming and friendly to new professionals. And he will sit with somebody and he will ask them questions about themselves and get to know them and kind of bring them like out of their shell. I've like seen him do that. And I feel like he's such a genuine person. He's one of my favorite people. And he's been a great mentor to me and advisor to me in my career. So he's just one, you know, of many. I could run a whole list of people like that. But don't be afraid to, if you're listening, you know, don't be afraid to approach people. If it bothers you to like reach out at a conference, like the face-to-face is too much, start a relationship virtually, you know, reach out to them on LinkedIn that way. Then maybe over time, hey, I'm going to go to this conference. Are you going to be there? Yeah. You know, can we maybe meet up? You know, I'd like to talk to you, you know, invite the person for a cup of coffee, whatever, something like that. And you would be surprised at the number of people that will actually respond positively and will take time out, you know, for you in their career. When I was the busiest I ever was in my career years ago, I mentored tons of students. I mean, I had a lot of people that I worked with and would advise and help them. And it was one of the most rewarding things that I had done, because when you see these people that you've worked with, when they start working their way up in the HIM profession, it's like you can feel proud of that you were actually there for them in the beginning to encourage them and guide them, because there are a lot of people out there just struggling. Or people would come to me. I had one girl who came to me. She had a bad experience with someone who had been a mentor to her, and she was looking for someone to fill that gap. And then it's trying to overcome, you know, some mentors aren't necessarily going to be the best. There are some interesting people out there. I'll just say that. I knew who had been kind of like mentoring her. And so I could kind of see why there was an issue there. But, you know, you have nothing to lose, and the chances of you having a positive experience far outweigh the negative experience. Yeah. It just does. It absolutely does.
Always ask yourself, what's the worst that can happen if I start talking to this person? You know, are they going to, what is the worst? It's not really the worst. When I first started the podcast, I was I found it as a way to network with people. I really wanted to go from just going with peers and going with people that I really looked up to, you know, and I was very much afraid to think, you know, I think the one thing that kind of sits in people's minds are certain doubts. If you have doubts, it's not going to work. And one of the doubts that I had is, if I ask this person, would they even be interested in doing the podcast? And so, but most of them are like, especially in the beginning, they're like, oh, really, a podcast? Oh, what, you chose me? You know, like they would feel like, you know, like really, why me? And then you explain why you're interested in them. I think that's what you have to communicate that. You can't just say, can we do this? You have to explain to them why we need this, because I feel you're interesting. Interesting. Because of this, I think I look up to you because of this. You have to tell them. You can't just demand it. You really have to just communicate that aspect to to making that connection. I want to make this connection because I feel, let it out. Tell that person, right. You know, you're not trying to create a, you know, you're just kind of a simple connection. It's not like a relationship. You just want a simple connection. Right. And eventually down the line, as you create more conversations, you will develop a good relationship.
Yes. I mean, so I actually ended up becoming friends with a lot of my college instructors when I came out of the program. And then you go to events and your teachers are there. One of my instructors at FIU, me and her, once I graduated, we actually were roommates multiple conventions. You know, we became friendly. And then another, you know, instructor of mine, you know, we're still friends to this day. We hang out at like all the conferences and we see each other personally. It's like, so I became friends with instructors, which is kind of cool because, okay, in the classroom, you're the student, but now you graduate and you're the professional and they see you that way. I mean, they were even friendly enough at conferences, you know, before your full, you know, your full RHIA or RHIT, you know, whatever it is. And so I've just built a lot of, you wouldn't necessarily think of that. Like your college instructor is going to become, you know, your colleague and then a friend. Right, you're not looking at them like that in the classroom. But that's kind of cool. So we're talking a little bit about mentoring. And so you have a reputation for mentoring many new HIM and coding professionals. But I want to know who has been the most influential person in your career and why?
Most influential? Oh, in what aspect?
If you have more than one, you can share.
I have more than one. Yeah. It's just different aspects. You talk about Mario Perez, right? So one of them is Mario Perez, right? So when I was a student, I wish I want him on the podcast too. I actually told him, but he's like, you know, I'm sure he's busy. But I think you told him to get on the podcast with me when we, I don't know, was it a FEHIMA conference or some, I don't know. Mario Perez. My first encounter with him was I was the president of the Student Health Information Management Association at FIU. I was just thrown into that again, just like, here, you can be the president. All right, fine, I'll be the president. And so one of the things for our senior year was to have, I don't know, I think it was HIM week, right? And so we decided to plan a couple events, one of them being like a professional panel. You know, Mario's name came up and I'm like, okay, Mario, all right. So and I met him at the panel, and he was great. He kind of laid everything out. We invited him to our banquet, and I got him, you know, we've always connected in conferences, and he always says, hey Brian, how are you doing, how's the wife and kids? And so you know, he always remained that contact. And funny enough, when I got into the CDI job, he actually was the trainer that taught me DRGs. So you know, yeah, so we've always stayed connected. So when you think about mentoring, that's most influential. He's the one that kind of kicked me in the butt into CDI. Now, another one in the clinical side that helped me so much was Dr. Cecil Lomhoko, which I've interviewed him. So one of the things that we connected on LinkedIn, and then the thing that got me most interested in him is that phrase, the clinical truth. And so if you ever listen to him on podcasts or if you listen to him on webinars, that's what he's all about. And so it's about the integrity of the patient's story, making sure it's well documented. If it follows through with the clinical truth, you know, to make a long story short, if it follows through with the clinical truth, the medical record, it will withstand scrutiny of audits. You know, that's one thing. Another mentor was Sabita Ramnarace, was the one who hired me to the CDI position. Because I, you know, when you get into a position that you have no experience in, you have no choice but to look up to your boss. And she was a great boss, you know, helping me through the ropes, ensuring me like you're doing a good job, even though you have you're making a bunch of failures, but you're progressing. She gave me my first shot in inpatient coding, outpatient coding. So, and she mentored me a lot while I was doing the inpatient coding. Her name is Sue. So she mentored me as the inpatient coder. So every chart that I did had to go through her. So everything I got through her, she gave back to me. She said, you did this wrong. So every, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't have one. It's just depending. If you ask me which one it is, it's like depending on where in my career line that I've had it, but I've had multiple, and you're allowed to have multiple mentors along your way. Yeah.
Yeah. I've had a lot of people who've influenced me. And again, it's just what aspect, you know, where they've influenced you and how, you know, they've helped you. You know, there's a lot of people in the HIM profession, you know, Mario, he's one that's always been, you know, great for career advice and things. Another person that I consider a mentor and a friend is Perry Ellie. A lot of people will know Perry Ellie from HIM Recruiters. You know, he's always been a big fan of mine and my cheerleader, which, you know, I appreciate. And my one job, my one boss, Martha, she was amazing. She supported me. You know, I worked for her for 6 years and I worked there the whole time I was going to school, and she did whatever she could to support me. I could change my hours. I could modify things, whatever I needed to do. She helped me with projects. You know, so many people, but you know, one person that sticks out as being a big influence in my life is actually somebody who's not in HIM. And I don't know if I've ever told this story or not in a podcast. We may have talked about it briefly in one of your podcast interviews I did with you, that I used to have a fear of public speaking. Like that my big thing. And the thought of like speaking to, giving a speech and speaking to a large group was terrifying, because again, I was painfully shy. So going back to when I was in high school, one of the requirements was taking a speech class, and high school was definitely not a good time for me in general. For a lot of people, high school is not good if you're not part of the popular, you know, crowd, and you're kind of, you know, the outside there, that can be a little bit challenging. And so I was painfully shy, and I had to take the speech class. And I would write out my speeches like word for word on index cards and get up in front of the class and like read them. Like the thought of like making eye contact with anybody just like totally terrified me when I would do this. And I would get done with my speeches and my teacher would say, "You write the best speeches." She's like, "Can you please deliver them rather than read them?" And I never did. I wrote them all out and I read them. Well, then I got to college. And then in college, when I was working on my associate's degree, I got an associate's degree in business administration. Before I went on to FIU to get my bachelor's, I had to take a speech class again in college. And this instructor, I believe her name was Linda Hickey, I think it was so long ago. She was my speech instructor, and she was awesome. She was just like an amazing like lady. She was really great. But in her class, she right out of the gate said, "When you give a speech, you will give a speech. You will not write out your speech word for word and read it. You will get up there with an outline. You will get up there with note cards." Yeah. That's not happening like in my class. I am like stone cold panic, like over this, the fact that I have to, you know, speak in front of a group of people, and I have to pretty much go off of memory. I'm not going to have speeches written down in front of me. I'm just going to have an outline with my talking points. And because this is before I'm in the profession and I'm doing PowerPoint presentations and all that. I mean, this is like the beginning of like public speaking. And I was terrified of doing public speaking. And you had to do a speech every week, just about, you know, for this 16-week class. It was almost every week. And she would just give you the type of speech, and then you had free reign of like any topic that you wanted to do within that category. Like, you know, one week it was like a persuasive speech. Another one was like an instructional speech. She would just tell you the type of talk that you're doing. And interestingly, when I started out in that class, I was extremely nervous, and it drove me crazy to get up there with an outline. But every week that I did that, I got better and better at it. And I got more comfortable with it.
Yeah.
And then by the end of the 16 weeks, I was so sad that the class was over, because I enjoyed it so much. And what was great about her as an instructor is she could identify the strengths that the individuals had, and she would play to their strengths and encourage them. Now there, you know, in any group that big in a college class, you're going to have some that are never going to be public speakers. They just don't have what it takes to do it. It's just kind of one of those things. But she encouraged everybody and made everybody better. Like everybody came out of that class better than when they went into the class. Mm-hmm. And with me, she had honed in on me, I felt like, kind of, and gave me a little bit more attention because she saw, kind of like the teacher I had before, like, wow, this is really great content, but you're not delivering it to us. You're just reading it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so I think she kind of gave me the extra push, and I would talk to her outside of class sometimes and get her advice on things. So she is really the one who gave me that push and kind of helped develop me, you know, in that way. If I hadn't had that experience with her, I don't know how long it would have taken me to break out of that shell and then feel comfortable, you know, doing what I was doing. And I can remember the last speech that I gave, it was like the final speech of the semester. And I laugh about it now because clearly I learned nothing. Either that or the books I read were like a bunch of like BS and don't work. But my speech, my final speech on the last week that we had class was how to find the man that's right for you. And I spoke about that for 10 minutes and I did it. And I'm still single at my age. I've never been married. So like I said, either A, I didn't learn anything, or B, the books that I read were completely off the mark. But no, I gave this speech, how to find the man that's right for you. It was a 10 minute speech. And I made it funny and kind of silly and like entertaining, like going through the speech. And when I got done with the speech and she gave me the eval, she was like, A++++++. Wow. And she like absolutely like loved it. And classmates were entertained by it. But she was probably outside of HIM. She had the biggest impact on me going forward, because then the thought of speaking in front of a group, like then when I went on to FIU and I had to do it sometimes in class, it didn't bother me to do it. I felt comfortable doing it. And then at work, I would, you know, do training sessions and things of that nature. So I feel, I don't know how long it would have taken me. Eventually, I probably would have found a way to break out of it, knowing what I wanted to do. But she was just so, I mean, I wish I could find her today and tell her, you know, what an impact she had on me, you know, because again, it's outside of HIM, but it's impacted my HIM career so much. And talking is what I love doing the most. Like you and I talked about going to the conferences and people are like, mm-hmm. how can you get up in front of a group of people and talk, you know, to crowds that big? And I said, it doesn't bother me. The bigger the crowd, the more comfortable I am, which sounds crazy, but I'm more comfortable with 500 people than I am with 5 people. It's mm-hmm. just the way that it is. And I try to explain the dynamic to people. I say, when you're sitting in a room with 5 people, you have to make eye contact with all 5 people.
Yeah.
And you got to be dialed in. When you're in a room of 500 people, you don't have to make eye contact with one person in that room. You're scanning the room. You're kind of getting a general feel.
Yeah. It's, you're alternating your audience.
Yeah. It's different. So I'm like, it's actually like, you know, less personal or like less, it's less intimate. There's just, it's less intimate. There's more people
there, you go.
There mm-hmm. to kind of play off of and, you know, kind of like see and get that read off of. And so it's just not an issue. But if you would have asked me years ago if I would have ever pictured myself doing that, and that's my favorite thing to do, public speaking, give me a platform and I'll speak. And then, you know, where the shyness went away on speaking my mind, I don't exactly know when or why. I've got the reputation of people who know me. I always will speak up on things, and I'm never shy about my thoughts and opinions. And I think that's good. I think more people need to be like that. Don't let other people silence you and intimidate you. Not speak your truth, be your true self. Not everybody's going to like you. No matter what you do, you can't please everybody. And again, I think that comes with age. You just decide, I'm going to be me, I'm going to do me. And if other people don't like it, I mean, not that you're mean or rude to people, anything like that. I'm not talking about that, but you're just genuinely being you and the best version of you. And if other people don't like it, then too bad for them.
That's important. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. So, okay. So I have to ask you about this. I have to. Okay. So when I talked to Christine, she revealed her most embarrassing moment professionally.
Oh.
that involved you. Okay. Mm. Calling you Tony. So she told that story on the podcast. I think that was, I don't know, part one. Episode or was part three? Was it part
three?
Was it the one that came out today? Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. I talked to her for so long, and I moved her episodes around. The way I released them is not the sequence that it was recorded in. Oh. I did some trickery there. So and how I pieced them together. So that's why I don't remember exactly. Okay. So that episode dropped today, the day that I'm interviewing you. Uh-huh. So that was there. So I want to ask you, what is your most embarrassing moment professionally?
Oh,
I'm going to flip it. Now you have to share.
my most embarrassing moment, I wanted to share with my boss, but I didn't get a chance to. So I'm going to release it here for the first time. So back
it's
in
an exclusive.
Yeah, it's an exclusive. Bum, 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 bum.
I feel so special.
The most embarrassing moment in happened when I was a CDI, right? So way back when, do you remember when we, before webinars, we had audio seminars.
That's how
audio
I started
seminars,
speaking.
Right?
Yes, sir.
Audio seminars. So we had to huddle in a conference room, sit around a phone on a conference line. We would have printed out, handouts. And I think I just had my daughter. So this had to be in 2008, right? So 2 years as a CDI specialist. We're going through these monthly audio webinars. I'm really sleep deprived, okay? You know where this is going, okay? And so I think it was Dr. Kennedy who was the speaker, but he was a great speaker. It was always funny, but I was just so tired, right? So in any meeting, any type of meeting, I am not the one who is like engaged, you know? I am the one in any meeting, I'm all the way in the back, just like this, you know, just like chilling out, you know, hanging out in the back, just listening. I got you. Just give me the, you know, is this a meeting just to have a meeting? You know, I need to get back to work. But I was really tired. And so I sat myself like in a corner right here, and I put my head out. So I put my head on the corner and I was sitting back, right? And then I don't know, like I don't know if you ever had this feeling, like you think your eyes are open, but they're not. They're like, you're like this, like this, right? You ever had those when you're really tired and you do, I wish you guys could see this on video, but I would tilt, let me explain this through audio. I was so sleepy. I figured that I could open by tilting my head back and closing my eyes a little bit, and some be open, right? So you could see it as like this, right? You could still see my pupils, right? But I'm like this, and I would kind of open them like this, right? And so it got to a point that I nodded off, but I caught myself nodding off, and this is the noise that I made. like that, my eyes were like this, right? And then everybody in the conference room was looking at me. And so my boss was looking at me. My colleagues were looking at me. And then nobody said anything at the conference, right? And so the audio webinar finished, right? Since nobody said anything and gave me feedback, I didn't know exactly what happened. So I had to go to one of my colleagues who is she's one of the real people. Like, you know, she'll tell it to me straight. Uh-huh. And her name is Donna. I said, so we go back, we take our computers, we go back to the floor, we go up to the floor and our computers are together. And I said, Donna, what happened in that meeting? And she says, you just nodded off in front of everybody. So like that, like, oh. And so I didn't know. So that was my most embarrassing moment. I wanted to tell her. And so when I got my boss on, I asked her, do you remember when I nodded off in the audio webinar? She says, yeah. And I says, what did you think? I wasn't too happy. That's my most embarrassing moment.
That's funny. Oh gosh. That's Yeah, that's a, I loved Christine's story. That was funny. So when she told that story, she also referred to you as the Brad Pitt of her industry.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm like,
so when you heard that, what did you think when she called you the Brad Pitt of our industry?
Well, the thing is that, all right. So let me give you some backstory. So if you want to listen to it, listen to my episode with Christine, but she mentioned that she did connect with me, right? She connected with me, right? Yeah. She connected with me.
Yes.
And then she sent a blanket message that says, Tony, hey, Tony, hey, Tony. Somebody read it. Hey, Tony, I'm a big fan. Like some type of Italian. I'm a big fan. Please check out my company, Sterling Global Solutions, right? Like .com. I'm like, what? Tony? And so I told her, like, anybody who does that, I like to play with them. Like, for example, all right, if I used to do this a lot, when telemarketers would call me and they're from, like, I don't know, like a foreign country, the Philippines, especially the Philippines or India, I would mess around with them. I would match their accents. I would just mess around with them. And lately I would get these telemarketers and they would say hello, and I would come up with like a scary voice. I would go like, hello, what are you doing? And it says, oh, we're here to call you about extending your warranty on your car. What car are you talking about? Right. I would play around with them. And sometimes I would, you know, act like if I'm really deaf, I'm like, what did you say? And they're like, oh, what? And so there are other ones who would be like, oh, we want to refinance your mortgage. Are you happy with your mortgage? I'm very happy with my mortgage. Do you know what your interest rate? Oh, it's good. It's a lot. And so I would just go click like that, right? I would hang up the phone. But with this one, with the Tony thing, I'm like, okay, all right, let's see how I can have fun with this, right? And I said, I don't know who Tony is, but you know, I don't know if you have the right person. And so she's like, oh my God. And I'm like, you know, the dead silence was because I'm like, okay, cool. I thought it was, she was just trying to market to me. But then I saw her name come up a lot in with her podcast, and I decided to connect with her. But when I heard, she didn't tell me about the Brad Pitt though. She didn't refer me as Brad Pitt in my episode. I'm like, what? Brad Pitt? I don't look like Brad Pitt. And so, you know, my youngest daughter says I could look like The Rock if I raise my eyebrow right. So I would have expected Dwayne Johnson of the HIM industry, but not That's Brad funny. Pitt. You know, I don't have the nice hair or whatever. But I was flattered, actually. I was laughing. I was like, oh, well, Brad Pitt, that's pretty cool. That's pretty nice. So I was laughing, though. I was working, doing my audits. I'm like, you know, doing research, you know, for your podcast. And I'm like, okay, let's get to episode 3. I'm like, Brad Pitt. Oh, okay, cool. I was surprised and flattered, but I don't know if I would consider myself Brad Pitt though.
I can see what you're saying, like with The Rock. I can see that. Like, I don't know how she came up with Brad Pitt out of like all the celebrities.
To, like, it sounded like she got really nervous talking about it because she kept on calling me Tony. I'm like,
yeah, she still calls me Tony.
Stop calling me Tony. Yeah. But I told her that I do have a brother-in-law. His name is Anthony. Mm-hmm. So that's the only thing that I kind of like, okay, we'll make some, you know, indirect connection and just make it that way. But hey, whatever.
Yeah. I'm flattered. So it's funny. So you, like, you know, mentioning Anthony, and then just a few moments ago when you were like doing the accent for like the Tony.
Yeah. That's how I heard it. Hey, yeah, Tony. Tony, I'm a big fan.
So this reminded me of something. Okay. So this was back in 2013. I was going to speak at the New Jersey Health Information Management Association meeting in Atlantic City. Okay. And so I took a friend of mine with me, and I remember saying to her, I'm like, oh, I'm like, I hope that, you know, what did I say to her? I go, I feel sorry for, you know, the poor guy that gets, you know, stuck sitting next to the two of us because we're like crazy and we like cut up and, you know, this flight. So we get on, we board, and we're like in our seats, and we're like looking to see who's going to come and sit with us. I had the aisle seat. She had the middle seat, and whoever was sitting with us was going to have the window. Mm-hmm. And so all these people are boarding and like nobody's still there. Well, then you see this guy, okay, who has the gold chain, the open shirt, you know, and the pants. And so he's looking for the seat and I'm like, oh, I think it's him. And he's like, oh, he's like, I get to sit with the two of yous. He's like, yeah. I'm like, oh my gosh. So he goes and he sits down in his seat. He's thrilled to be sitting with the two of us. And he just starts talking and talking and talking.
Oh, cool.
His name is Anthony. Okay?
Anthony.
And so Anthony is a talker, like a big talker. Mm-hmm. And he's telling us all these stories. And in multiple stories, this was his line. He said, so my buddy says to me, yo, Anthony.
Hey, yo, Anthony.
Yeah, yo, Anthony. I can't tell you how many times I heard him say that on that flight. We were flying from West Palm into, I think, where was it? Philly. And then we drove to Atlantic City. Mm. And he was actually going to Atlantic City as well. Oh,
that's funny.
And he was flirting with me like on the flight. And I'm just like trying, nope, I don't want to encourage this. I don't want any part of this. Well, my friend, he asked me for a business card. I'm like, sorry, they're packed away in my bag. I don't have any on me. My friend gives him her phone number because he's like, oh, hey, you know, maybe we can go boating. Well, I have a boat, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, boy.
Of course, he's doing it with his accent or like whatever. Mm. And so she gives him the number. They exchange numbers. And I'm just trying to get off the plane. And then he's like wanting to like hug us when we get off the plane, you know, this guy. So then that night we found a place to watch. It was the NBA finals were going on. The Miami Heat was playing the San Antonio Spurs. I'm like, I've got to get in front of a TV and see this game. So we go over to a different hotel. They were not showing it anywhere in the hotel we were staying at.
No.
So we go next door and we're watching it. He calls her on her cell phone while we're there. And he's having a conversation with her. And so she's trying to give the phone to me and I wouldn't take it because I don't want to talk to him and I want to watch the basketball game. And so she hangs up and she's like, he has a message for you. Tell your friend I love her. I love her. I really love her.
Hey, tell Stacy I love her.
Oh, that's so funny. He was hilarious. But I'm like, yeah, that's somebody I don't want to keep in communication with. I'm like, good. But he was that stereotypical like Italian guy with the accent. Like I said, the open shirt and the gold chain.
Machismo, everything.
Oh my gosh. It was funny. So yeah, he was quite smitten with me. And I'm like, yeah, no, thank you. I don't want any part of that. I'm like, you're probably like twice my age.
Oh, on top of everything else. Oh wow.
So that whole
forget about it.
It was your accent that triggered that memory of that trip to Atlantic City. And that was a crazy trip with some crazy stuff that can't be discussed in a podcast.
Yes. See what you did, Christine? Look what you did. Look what you did. Look what you started.
Christine had nothing to do with
that. Yeah, she started Tony. Then I got the accent. Yeah, then Tony, you start the story. There you go. Yeah. Bing, bada, boom.
Yeah. I could tell more about that trip in a podcast. I could.
Sounds like a good conversation for your dinner with Christine.
I think I already told Christine.
Oh, did you? Oh, okay.
She knows my Atlantic
Should have recorded
City.
It.
Yeah, my Atlantic City story. Well, this is the thing. This is a topic I talked about with Victoria when I interviewed Victoria. Victoria Mall, I don't know when her podcast is going to come out, as I said. So for my listeners, you may have already heard Victoria. You may have not already heard Victoria. But I've already recorded with her. And we were talking about knowing your audience and people's sense of humor and being careful about things that you say, because not everybody shares the same sense of humor. So we kind of had a few laughs like around that. And I shared something funny from the FHIMA convention that I didn't say out loud, that I wanted to say out loud in front of a group of people. Because some people don't have the same sense of humor. They'll find it, you know, offensive. And so it's walking that fine line that I've got some crazy stories I could tell. But because it's a professional podcast, you're kind of like, where's that line in telling some of the stories? I mean, I was on a trip. I was on a professional trip for a speaking engagement where these things like happened and they're not my doing. I'm just like an innocent bystander that gets caught up in things with people, you know, sometimes. But yeah, so anyway. I totally got off on a tangent there, but that immediately reminded me of, yo, Anthony.
So, hey, yo.
I couldn't resist that. Oh my gosh. Yeah, that was quite the interesting flight with him. Okay, so let's go ahead and try to land this plane that's been circling for a very long time.
In the Bermuda Triangle.
You got me off my flight path, Brian Quee.
Well, that's what happens when you get me on as a guest.
And we've just been going like all over the place. So, okay, final question. Mm-hmm. What is one question that you wish I had asked you and how would you have answered it? So what is the one thing you wish I would have asked you about and we would have discussed?
Darn, I should have prepared for that because I know I listened to it on.
If you listen to other people, you know I've asked that question before.
A question that you didn't ask me is, to tie in things with everything. What's going on with the YouTube channel, right? So like this has to tie back with the conversation about the men and women thing. And so you mentioned that you're okay with talking with guys because you match up, you know, personality, the gap, whatever, you know, just meeting up with them. When one thing that I'm struggling with, and I'm going to really just lay it out here, is the one thing that I'm struggling with the YouTube channel is trying to be a guy speaking to women. So I don't know. I the thing is, I don't get enough feedback from the channel. Mm-hmm. To understand that, am I getting to my audience? And that'll feed into, you know, probably Victoria Mole, since she is like a rock star on YouTube. But the thing is that she's a female, probably with a mostly female audience, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
But what about a guy speaking to a female audience? And the thing with the online thing versus the one-on-one, I can get the immediate feedback. But with YouTube, I don't get immediate feedback that I'm used to. So it may be a slow process. It is a slow process. Maybe it has to do with the algorithm, but I'm always trying to, you know, question myself, am I giving out good content that caters for an industry that is dominated by women, right? And so one thing that's something that I need to figure out. It's not like a problem that's going to hold me back. I just need to keep on creating content and see what sticks. But I wish I had the answer. Maybe you can give me the answer. But one thing that I did ask, her name is Noelle Dale. She's been on the podcast. I had concerns really early on, like about starting the channel. I said, I don't think I would fit into this thing, especially with medical coding, because I'm a guy. Maybe it's better if it was a female. And she says, no, you do you. You know, mm-hmm. People are drawn to your personality. If it's not, you know, getting the good numbers, maybe you need to change something. So that's where I'm at right now. So like, you know, I know you've had conversations with Christine about, you know, how to deal with guys. But then for us, the 7%, the 10%, how do we, you know, I can answer how I deal with women in the field. But how does it work with YouTube? You know, I'm trying to portray, you know, I cannot. How can I say it? I cannot do a reconnaissance mission on the women that I am talking to, right? I cannot get a sense of, because I'm not getting that feedback. The only thing I'm getting is likes and views.
Right.
That's it. And dislikes, even maybe mm-hmm. one dislike. So yeah. I guess I'm doing okay. But I guess for guys, we need to know what's in your head because we need to read things face value. And we cannot read in between the lines. So let's close on that. All right. So
you don't want to know all that's going on in our head. The way that I look at this, and I may view this differently than other females will, because again, I feel like if I'm talking with a guy, what I don't want a guy to talk to me like I'm a woman. I want a guy to talk to me like I'm another guy. Like that's one of the things that I enjoy about hanging out with guys or conversing mm-hmm. with guys mm-hmm. is treat me like one of the guys, talk to me like one of the guys, and guys like hanging. I can be the only girl in a group of guys, and guys love having me in the group because they don't need to act differently with me. They can just say or do whatever they want like with me in the group. And so I say that to say this, I don't think that you need to think about that when you're creating your content, like, oh, how the female is receiving it or what they want. Just be you and give the content that you would give to anybody, like regardless of male or female. I think it's, if it's great content, it's going to land. I mean, you're not getting, you don't want to try to get into the psyche of like women, trust me, you don't want to go there.
Yeah, that's what I guess too.
And you can't, because all women are different too. That's the other thing. It's like what, you know, one woman likes, the other one like doesn't. And we all, we have our differences, where I feel like men are pretty simple. If you've cracked the code for one guy, you can probably apply it to almost every guy after that in all aspects
just about
of life.
Just about. And, you have the core. Women,
exactly. Men are very simple. There's not a lot of differences from male to male. It's like what makes a guy tick, you know, this guy tick is going to make this guy tick. It's just the way it is. Women are completely complex and not like that. So my advice would be is don't even think about that, like that you're in a, just be you, be authentic. And hopefully this like will not offend you when I say this, but you have the right amount of girly in you for being a guy.
Okay. All right. All right. All right. Okay. So, but I'm not, guys, not taken.
Yeah. Some guys wouldn't want to hear that. They're like too macho to like hear that, but I think you have the right amount of that, which is a good thing for a guy to have, because that then helps you if you have a little bit of that, where some guys are just, you talk about like the machismo, like that kind of guy, that's never going to play well to like a group of like women. But if you have a guy that's more like confident in themselves, it can be that fun. Like I have like a guy friend who, what he likes about me is he's like, I can talk to you like you're one of the guys. And I say to him, what I like about you is I can talk to you like you're one of the girls. Like we each have enough of that vibe from the opposite sex
that
makes it work. But he's a super macho, you know, guy, not that over the top, but and when I tease him about his girly side, he laughs. He thinks it's funny. We have a good laugh over it. And me, I'm kind of like a guy in a lot of ways. So I wouldn't get so caught up in that. Again, you could try to do the analysis and it just be you. And I think with Victoria, I don't think that it matters male or female. It's just her. She's being her. She's creating good content and she's not trying to give people what they want. She's just like, I'm producing like cool stuff. And then people happen to like the cool stuff that I'm producing.
Yeah.
And so I think you'll find that like over time, like what resonates with people.
That's what it is. Yeah.
Yeah, don't try to figure out women. Just don't even go there.
That's why I'm like, I just do me. But the thing is, I know how to cater to, I think that's the word, cater to the audience. And not, and another word that you were saying, like explaining it like a guy, I don't want to, what's the term? Mansplain? Girls, I've heard ladies don't like that, you know, when that happens. Like you, I don't know. I don't even know what it is, but I try not to do it.
Yeah. If you're authentic, if you're you, that's the thing that I think is the most important piece of advice for anybody. Just be you and be authentic. People can tell when you're not being authentic and it will not work if you're not authentic. And people who, you know, like you are drawn to you, the authenticity, they'll, because I even worry with the podcast. I'm like, me and my big mouth, I'm like, boy, I could really step in it and like, you know, alienate people and have people kind of flip on me, but I can't worry about that. I just need to go out and do the content and be real and authentic. And if you like my authenticity, there are people who love my authenticity and the fact that I'm like unfiltered, and there are other people who don't care for it. Well, then I'm not for you. You can go find, you know, someone else and get your content somewhere else. So I have tried to kind of just push those thoughts out of my head in doing the podcast. And I'm more like winging it with the podcast. Like, honestly, when I do it, I'm still trying to figure out.
It's fine.
Exactly what I want to do. And you know, it's interesting because now that I've been doing the podcast, people are so accustomed to seeing me in one facet of my life. Whenever I'm talking to groups, it's professionally, it's about a coding topic, it's about a serious topic, they don't really know much about me personally. And so I had the question in my head, I'm like, how are people going to receive me once they actually know about me? Because they don't. And then I'm like, There are people who I get good feedback. I haven't gotten a lot of feedback, but I've only gotten positive feedback. Nobody has sent me any angry emails or any comments that I've made. Although I don't know, I'm sure eventually when you put yourself out there in the public domain, it'll come, it'll hit at some point. That was one thing Victoria and I talked about, was kind of like, you know, just not paying attention to the haters and, you know, tuning that out and just moving forward. And again, being authentic. That was a much longer answer than you probably anticipated for me on that particular question there. But yeah, just be you and don't think that you're talking to women. Just think I'm talking to, you know, my peers, my colleagues, my HM professionals. Maybe even you treating the audience like you're talking to a guy. Maybe that will make better content for women too. I don't know.
Maybe. Who knows? I have to experiment that.
So like I said, when I'm with guys, I like guys being guys. And when they're trying to behave differently, like even last year, I joined a golf league and I signed up as a single and they put me with a group and they put me in with three guys. And they're wanting to go, and they all know each other and they're friends and they're wanting to have their fun and their golf. And the one guy had kind of mouth on him and he would say different things. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry, I shouldn't say that stuff in front of you. I said, please feel free to behave how you normally would. I'm like, don't feel like you have to change because I'm here. I'm like, I'm okay with it. It's like, I'm around you 2 hours and then I leave. Not a big deal. I don't want to ruin your fun because you're trying to be careful not to say something that like might offend me or that you feel that you shouldn't say in front of me. I'm when it comes to stuff like that, I'm difficult to offend. Some areas I'm a little bit easier, but there I tell guys, I'm like, I blow it off. I have guys apologizing to me all the time. And I'm like, really, you don't need to. I'm like, I'm fine. And that's where I'm more like a guy, I think, in that aspect. I let a lot of things go where other women, things that are said would freak out over things that were said. Just anyway, that's a whole nother topic. We won't even get into that and just some stories I could share there.
Oh my. You should write it down. Just make a note of it to talk about it later.
So many things. Okay. So finally, this is my final question for you. So other than telling my listeners how to best connect with you, that's going to be my last question.
Okay.
But what does the future hold for Brian Quay? Like, what are you working on for like the next, you know, few years? Where do you see yourself going? You're always trying new things.
Yeah. Just, you know, it's not that I'm getting bored. I just want to be challenged, I guess, or whatever it may be, but the podcast is going to keep on going. Of course, new guests. I think I'm trying to get away from the usual medical coding and CDI crowd and trying to get into more healthcare type of conversation or guests. Mm-hmm. So what I'm finding is people are emailing me guests to have on my podcast. So you'll probably have that same thing down the line too. And there are some interesting people that may want to come on as a guest, but it's not necessarily, you know, I want to expand. That's why I called the podcast Not Elsewhere Classified, because it's not really, when you think about it, coders know it's coding, but when you, as a non-coder, it could be something else. So that's where I really want to grow the podcast. Mm-hmm. So that's the podcast. The YouTube channel, I'm still figuring it out. I keep on upgrading my equipment. I just got a new stream cam and all of that, but I think I just need to stop and start creating the content. It's just a matter of finding the time, because my son is he's done with football, but now he's considering lacrosse, so I don't know what that'll look like in the winter, you know, in next year. So it's all about timing, but I do want to do more of what I did with the, you know, like the side screen and then have the web, like the presentation type of thing. Just me talking off the cuff about certain things, not necessarily coding training, that type of thing. I just want to leave the YouTube channel just to talk about things in the industry. Now, I know we talked about I've posted things on social media about becoming a trainer. That's still up in the air. I took your feedback. I've actually took a couple people's feedback, and I might try another way, you know. So like, I do want to ultimately teach people about coding, but I just don't want it to be the boring usual webinar type of teaching, you know. So I just need to figure that out. I do want to continue to give content out for free. But I do know at some point I do want to get it behind some form of like a subscription based a paywall. I'm not looking to make big money, but like, you know, I want people to like, you know, contribute to the things that I'm trying to invest in here, especially camera equipment. I want to change this microphone. The podcast so far is almost paying for half of my new microphone once once we get there. But it's coming into play. I mean, really, all of the stuff that I'm trying to do is not really to make money, but it is, and I'm enjoying it. But I'll just keep on going. It's just all about creating content.
Okay, so what is there? You are across all social media platforms, but what is the best way for my listeners to connect with you?
LinkedIn. If you want me, not the medical coding geek, not the funny TikTok stuff, not the podcast, not the Facebook groups or anything like that. If you just want me, just find me on LinkedIn. Last name is spelled C-U-I. You'll find me there. That's if you just want me. Now, if you want everything else, well, then you know what it is. MedicalCodingGeek.com on Instagram. I know we didn't have a conversation about Reels, but TikTok has been fun getting in front of the kids. Since I started getting on YouTube, I just started getting on TikTok and having fun on that. Facebook groups, most importantly. And then, of course, this podcast. But you want me? Go to LinkedIn.
I cannot believe this, but you and I have been recording for 3 hours and 26 minutes.
I'm looking at the time.
We've been recording longer than I recorded with Christine, with Victoria, with Tony. Like, we beat the record. Now,
Do I get a medal for that?
Yeah, I'll send you a medal. I will definitely send you a medal. I'll see if I can get a gold chain from Anthony.
Hey, Tony. Send it to you.
So probably this episode is going to get edited down. I'm not going to put everything in that we talked about because I'm going to have to cut some stuff out. So I'll use my discretion on that. I'll probably cut most of me out in my nonsense of me sharing too much. Oh my gosh. Well, thank you, Brian, so much for joining me for Who Cares What Stacy Says? Mm-hmm. You will always have that to your credit that you named my podcast. So thank you so much for joining me. Much appreciated.
Thank you very much for having me.
That brings us to the end of my 3-part series with Brian Quee. Thank you, Brian, for all of your insights and, of course, for all of the laughs along the way. As always, I want to say thank you to all of my listeners for tuning in and remind you, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please be sure to take a moment to give the podcast a 5-star rating. Also, if you have feedback you'd like to share on an episode or have a topic suggestion for a future episode, please send an email to podcast@radrx.com. That's podcast@radrx.com. And I still am seeking questions for an Ask Stacy segment. So please submit any questions you would like to have me answer in a future episode to Ask Stacy. That's askstacy@radrx.com. And Stacy is spelled STACIE. Thanks again, everyone, for tuning in, and have an amazing week.
Thank you for listening to Who Cares What Stacy Says? You can connect with Stacy on social media. You can find her business page for RadRx on Facebook, and you can connect with her personally on LinkedIn. Don't forget to check out the online training courses offered by RadRx, Cracking the IR Code, Mastering Interventional Radiology and Cardiology Online Training, or Cracking the Diagnostic Radiology Code Online Training. Thanks again for tuning in to Who Cares What Stacy Says? A podcast providing insights and advice on how to take your medical coding career to the next level.